Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
On what feels like a summer Friday, Carton Roberts, Craig is off, and I took him off the golf course on a 90-degree day. I feel bad about it.
Don't feel bad. I played yesterday. Played pretty well.
Good.
So,
because when weather is 90,
I'm playing a lot.
When it's 90 degrees, I hate it personally, but I know love it. I know that's your jam.
That is me, 90. Bro. I'm either playing golf or I'm out working on my tan. You know, I'm doing one of those two things. So
I got to tell you, you look very tan.
Well, I am.
You look good.
Yeah. Well, I work on this.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like in the summer, I want to look tan. I mean, you know, so I'm happy. By June 2nd, I got a pretty good tan already.
But this is all natural. This is not like a fake tan the way Loogie has one or Sid Rosenberg has one.
Loogie does fake tans?
Yeah, he puts like the
spray tan. No, I'm not Sid, who, you know, goes out in the sun for an hour and then goes into the tanning bed for another hour. No, right? That's not me.
And you don't do the spread on either, right?
No spreads. No, hardly.
Well, I'm glad you're here. It's a good time to be a baseball fan. The Yankees are back. The Mets are back. The Mets coming off a sweep of the Phillies. The Yankees have been playing great baseball. And for the Yankees, they not only have been playing well and they get set for this interleague series against the Dodgers, they got the horses coming back.
Yeah.
They got Josh Donaldson, who no one's excited about. Tommy Kahnle, who can help the bullpen.
Giancarlo.
But the big one is Giancarlo Stanton.
What's the over-under before he gets hurt again? You give him a month before there's another injury from Giancarlo?
That's the unfortunate thing about him. When he plays, he changes his entire lineup.
Of course.
Especially if Rizzo's going to play tonight, too. We'll see. He's missed the last couple of days. But all of a sudden, the Yankee offense, which has scored plenty of runs other than the other night, they had the three straight games of scoring 10. But all of a sudden, instead of Willie Calhoun protecting Aaron Judge, you have Anthony Rizzo and Giancarlo Stanton. All of a sudden, the Yankee lineup looks menacing.
Well, look, I look at the Yankees this way. As long as Aaron Judge is playing, okay, they're going to be a team to be reckoned with. Because to me, you could talk to me till the cows come home about Ohtani and is the best player in baseball. I'll put it this way. The most dangerous offensive weapon in the game is Aaron Judge.
He's also the guy who, if you take him away from the Yankees, they are a completely different team.
No question about it.
He is
no
the question. Most valuable of valuables. And we saw that a year ago, where if you took him away from that Yankee team, I don't know if they make the playoffs. I kind of feel the same way now. Now, obviously, once they're healthier, it's a much more representative lineup when you've got Rizzo and you've got Giancarlo. But Aaron Judge has basically been doing the same thing. Other than the week and a half that he missed when he was on the injured list, so he missed a little bit of time, the guy's really picked up where he left off last year.
He's got 17 home runs already, right? I don't know how many RBIs he's got. He's batting like 300, whatever he's batting. No, I'm telling you, the guy's unbelievable. He really is. I mean, and look, I understand Ohtani pitches, but you know, Judge is a tremendous defensive player, too. I mean, this guy's a great all-around player.
I almost think that Ohtani needs to just be disqualified because he's doing something none of us have ever seen. This includes Ruth. Ruth didn't even really do this, if we're being honest.
No, but he was pitching and then he went. You know, he didn't do both at the same time.
So, any discussion around this?
I remember. I was around for that,
You saw
that 1918 season in Boston.
He had a long wait before they won it again.
Right.
So, you put Ohtani to the side because he's so unique. But in terms of being an all-around baseball player and valuable to your team and clutch, because a lot of his home runs give him the lead.
Yep,
a lot of the home runs tie the
it.
Game. He's been an incredibly clutch player. But if you're a Yankee fan right now, you got to feel pretty good. You're coming off a series win against Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
You're getting healthier. You get a little bit of a challenge with this first-place Dodger team. But after the early bumps in the road where things looked bleak, here they are sitting there kind of within shooting distance of Tampa Bay. They're six games back. They're 10 games above 500. They're in a playoff spot if the season ended
in the toughest division in baseball.
Oh, not even close.
It's not even debatable.
I mean, every team's above 500.
Yep.
to the point where the last place team, the Red Sox, would only be a half game out of first place in the American League Central. They'd be tied for first place in the National League Central, and they're in last place in the American League East. It's remarkable. And then you have the Mets, who completely had the 180 from the disaster in Colorado, where the starting pitching was awful, the bullpen was awful. They're scoring plenty of runs, but they give up 21 runs in two games. And I got to tell you, after that series, I'm looking at this rotation, and unlike the lineup, where there's always the help of, hey, let's call up this guy, let's call up that guy, there's no help with the pitching. You need guys to pitch better. And over the three games against the Phillies, starting with Kodai Senga Tuesday, Cookie Carrasco Wednesday, and then Max Scherzer yesterday, all of a sudden, three guys that need to be better were better.
Hey, look, you know, you got two real good starts in a row from Carrasco, right? Went six innings, six and two-thirds innings, the one before that. You know, Scherzer now, back-to-back outstanding seven-inning performances that game in Colorado. Senga has been, look, you look at the splits. At home, he's unbeatable. You can't hit him at home. He's got like a 1.2 ERA. On the road, it's like four or five, whatever it is. But, I mean, we've seen Senga have some dominant games. I mean, the game he struck out 12 against Tampa, which really kind of started them back on.
Right.
You know, that was the game where Vientos hit the big home run to tie it, and then Pete eventually won it. You know, Alvarez got the big hit to tie it, the home run to tie it in that game, too. You know, so all of a sudden, you know, the pitching is starting to look a lot better. Now, Verlander's been one good start, one bad start. He had that unbelievable start against the Guardians, okay? Unbelievable start against them. Pitches eight innings, a throwback game. Him and Bieber both going eight innings. Oh, my God.
That was awesome.
And what was this, Gibson and Koufax? Yeah, I couldn't believe it. And then he goes to Colorado and gets destroyed.
Yeah.
So, you know, so I would think he pitches well tonight because now he's due for a good game against the Blue Jays
Let
tonight.
Max Scherzer be a reminder to all of us because I
thought he was done, bro.
Yeah, and a lot of people,
I got to tell you, I thought he was finished.
And I don't think you were crazy for thinking it because when you look at the way he closed last season, the Atlanta game, obviously what happened in the postseason, and then even everything he did this year, even opening day, like he was fine on opening day, and then he gives up a bunch of home runs and blows a lead late. Mets won the game anyway. But Scherzer had put together enough of a sample size, plus the injuries, plus the sticky stuff stop where he gets suspended, where you start to worry because at some point, older guys, as great as they are going to start to lose it. And there have been warning signs about Scherzer, but to Max's credit, especially the last two starts because he's gone deep in the game. He's given you seven innings.
Yeah. Oh, and he's been great.
Yeah, he has been almost back. Now, am I 100% confident in him? I wouldn't go 100%. I feel better. I think he's going to show us a lot next week because his next start is in Atlanta against the Braves, the site of the crime when he went down there last year and you know what at the bed, as did really the rest of the team. We wasn't alone in that.
Yep.
So I think if he goes out and pitches well against the Braves, I'll start to believe it even more. So with Verlander, who we've barely seen because he missed the first month of the year, I don't know. You almost want to give him the benefit of the doubt because he's a Hall of Famer, because he's got the long resume. But they need these guys to pitch well because if they struggle, there's no magic fix.
No.
With this lineup, when Escobar struggles or Vogelbach or Canna, we can scream and yell about Mauricio and Vientos.
Can we get Vogelbach out of here already?
Nah,
he stinks. How is this guy still on the team? You got to tell me. I mean, the guy never gets it. He never hits a home run. He rarely ever gets a big hit. He does walk a lot. I'll give him that. I mean, can we DFA this guy and bring Mauricio up, please?
That's the only thing he does is walk.
That's it.
That's it.
He's terrible.
He's been awful.
You know, at least Cannon out of the last couple days, you got a couple big home runs from Cannon, who kills the Phillies, by the way.
I know.
All of a sudden, you got him. You know, he's starting to hit a little bit. Pham had that big game last week at that four. I guess it was the game they lost to Colorado, 11-10.
Right.
He had four RBIs in that game. You know, he's hit a little better. But I just can't take Vogelbach anymore.
Well, I can't take the fact that Buck starts him every day.
I know.
And that's the problem. Like, I'm not necessarily in the camp of you got to get rid of him, you got to DFA him, because I think there is a good in Vogelbach. We're just not seeing it right now.
Tell me what that is, because I'm missing it.
Well,
tell me.
He can hit a few home runs. He just hasn't done it this year.
Home runs, bro.
No, this year he hasn't.
How many home runs did he hit for the Mets last year? Seven?
But he was more productive than this last year.
More productive than
this. He had like an 850 OPS.
Yeah, last year he was better than what he is now.
No, he's been terrible. And I wonder if it's getting to him, if it's starting to like pile up.
He gets booed a lot, too, and deservedly so.
I think, yeah.
Of course.
The problem to me is that Buck continues to play him. And the only conclusion I can come up with is that he hates Mark Vientos. I mean, that's
got a big hit yesterday. Drove in a run, you know, on a sack fly.
He had a big sacrifice fly. Yeah. He used him as a pinch hitter. But for the most part, he still feels like this need to start Vogelbach against right-handed pitching. Now, we'll see what he does tonight when the lineup comes out. They're facing old friend Chris Bassitt, who's a right-hander.
Yeah.
Vientos should be the DH.
Of course.
Period.
Of course he should. He should be the DH all the time. You tell him, you know, you're asking me about it. But it's interesting with the Mets because now all of a sudden they're winning at home. I think they've won 8 straight home games now.
Yeah.
They've also, and this stat to me, this is telling on when we're talking about the starting pitching. There's, I believe it's now 16-0 when a starter goes at least 6 innings.
Incredible, right?
Right? They haven't lost a game.
They win when they get length. Now, I know a lot of teams win when they get length, but the Mets haven't lost a game when they get length when they're starting
pitching.
Absolutely
not.
And, and sometimes it's boring to say it, but they just need guys to be better. Like, after that Colorado series, you look at that entire bullpen. You look at this rotation. These are the guys who are going to be here. They may be able to add a guy at the trade deadline, of course. That's still 2 months away. There's no one from the minor leagues that's coming up
save the rotation. Everybody from the minors is really an everyday player.
Right. Well, no, everybody from the minors would only be position players. There's starters, right?
That's what I'm saying. They're everyday players.
David Peterson was up here. No one wants to see him again.
David Peterson's terrible.
No, and he's been up and down in the minors. Joey Lucchese's okay, I guess.
Right. He had one good start against the Giants. He went 7 innings, and that was about it.
All downhill from there.
Right.
They got a prospect in Double A named Mike Vassell. He ain't coming up anytime soon. He got bombed in his last start. So,
well, Ohtani will be in a rotation next year.
Because
you know Uncle Steve's going home. Now, I don't know. He might stay in L.A.
Right.
What I hear, he wants to stay in the West Coast, play for the Dodgers.
Nobody really knows.
But who knows? You know, Uncle Steve will not be outbid for him.
And look, would you not want him?
Of course. I want him.
Of course.
I want him.
You know what scares me?
Of course I want him.
He could pinch
and he could hit behind Alonso.
Yeah, you're adding a slugger and you're adding an ace.
Not bad. Right.
But what scares me is if the Angels fall out of it, because there's still a couple of games above 500. They're in a race for a playoff spot. We'll see how long that lasts.
That they might trade him by the deadline?
Yeah, but let's say they decide, you know what, we're going to trade him.
Right.
I don't think they will, but let's just say the Angels decided. Artie Moreno says, we're going to trade Shohei Ohtani.
Right.
And, of course, Billy Epler makes the phone call. You know who they're going to ask for.
Well, but here's the thing. Are they signing him? That it all comes down to that.
It's a risk.
You're gonna, you're gonna tell me you want Mauricio or Vientos, Beatty, whoever you're gonna ask for. Forget Alvarez; he's off.
Well, no.
Alvarez is off the table.
It's gonna start with Alvarez.
No. Alvarez is
Joe,
he's on catcher for the next 10 years. I don't want to hear it.
I completely agree with you. I am not debating
that.
I am
not trading Alvarez.
But you know that when you're trading a two-way superstar that we've never seen before, they're going to ask for that first.
Well, you're not getting
it. And you say no. No way.
No, Alvarez is off the table.
All right.
You want to talk about Mauricio. You want to talk about Vientos. You even want to talk about Beatty. I'll talk about it with it for him.
Right.
I'm not trading Alvarez. He's here. He's my catcher for the next 10 years. How about the nonsense a couple weeks ago, that they were going to send him down? What is this called?
You know why that never worried me? Because he was never.
How can you?
It was never going to happen. It was such a non-worry because they were only going to have to make a decision once Narvaez comes back. And I looked at it this way. If Alvarez plays well, they're not going to send them down.
Right.
If Alvarez goes 0-30, they may send them down.
But plus, they love pitching to this guy now.
Right.
Even listen to what Scherzer says about him. I know he made a bad throw on that play at third base yesterday, a double steal.
He also made an incredibly clutch throw to nail JT Realmuto in the first game of this series.
Yes, he did.
After Ottavino walked the guy on 4 pitches.
Right. No doubt. 100% right. Yes. Now, look, I love him. And how many big... Look, I mean, every time he hits home run, it's a big home run. I mean, come on.
He's gotten a ton of clutch hits. He's been really impressive defensively.
He's off the table. Untouchable.
I agree with you, but this is the funny part when you call up prospects. You call them up, they play well, they become untouchable.
Guy's untouchable. I don't think Beatty's untouchable or Vientos is untouchable. Alvarez is untouchable.
I think you're
First of all, he's a catcher.
Right, right.
Okay? And he's a catcher that can hit. I'm not trading. There's no way I'm trading now. Don't even talk to me about Alvarez.
There's two things about Alvarez besides the offense, which is the obvious, and the clutch hitting like you mentioned. There are two things about him that just make me go crazy, like, wow.
Mm-hmm.
Number one, he's already this good defensively at a young age, and you mentioned it. The pitchers are raving about him.
Got a great arm, too. He likes to throw the ball to first base.
Incredible. Yeah, which I think is more valuable these days because of the whole pickoff rule.
Right, right.
The other thing that I've heard a few different people say about him, coaches, is that he works his ass off, and he's always learning and trying to get better. I think sometimes guys get to the major leagues, I made it, I'm done. To hear he still has that drive to get better at everything makes it scary on how good he can be. And he's been great, and it makes you wonder about the Mets, because the Mets would tell us through their little leaks, he's not ready defensively. He's not that good defensively.
Right.
What the hell were they watching?
Yeah, well.
Does he look good defensively to you?
Well, like I said, he's the catch. The way he's going, I mean, I look at the catches around baseball. He's one of the better ones.
He's already getting there.
Of course.
Because there's not a lot of great catchers in baseball.
No. So to me, he's off the table. Getting back to Otani, though, if I'm going to trade for Otani during the season, I mean, I got to have some kind of assurance that I'm signing him.
You know that's not going to happen.
Well, that's the problem.
I mean, Steve Cohen could have the biggest checkbook in the world, which he does, and make him an offer. When you're this close to free agency and you're about to become a free agent like we've never seen before.
Oh, forget it.
This is a free agent that is undescribable. How do you not just get there and see what the market
says? No, he's going to get there. I would not trade for him during the season. If they trade him, they trade him. And then, you know, you go after him at the end of the year. I mean, that's the way to do it. And I'll tell you something else, too. And I know he's kind of slumping a little bit lately. You know, Pete's got to get paid soon. Because I do not want to deal with what the Yankee fans had to deal with last year.
Scary,
with the drama,
right? Yeah.
That they could lose Aaron Judge, which, you know, was iffy for a while.
Whenever you let a guy get to free agency,
right, you never know.
There's always that chance
they
leave.
You never know. You cannot have that happen with Alonso.
We've seen legends leave, maybe not necessarily with the Mets and Yankees, but I always think back to Albert Pujols when he got to free agency. Mm-hmm. And we all assumed, I remember sitting next to him, like, he's staying in St. Louis.
Right.
But you gave another team an opportunity to give him a quote-unquote stupid contract, which it was. And guess what? The great Albert Pujols left St. Louis of all places.
Right.
So I agree with you. When you let a really good player get to free agency, you play a dangerous game. The Yankees played an incredibly dangerous game.
Very dangerous.
Now, they got him back, and you can't even imagine a world where Aaron Judge is not a Yankee. I mean, can you imagine that? Aaron Judge on the San Francisco Giants right now?
Hey, look, that's why, you know, that before he gets to free agency, Pete's got it. Because Pete is going to be the greatest everyday player in the history of the franchise.
If he stays healthy,
there's no question about it.
It will not be close.
Not even close.
But here's the thing about Otani that makes it scintillating to make a deal, even if it involves giving up a ton of prospects and not having that extension. It would be like trading for Soto and Gerrit Cole at the trade deadline. You would be trading for two superstars.
Yeah, no, I get it.
Now,
how often
does that happen at the trade deadline?
But you can. But like I said, Alvarez is off the table.
No, I get that. I totally get that. But that's why trading for him, as much as I would be scared of, it's a rental. What if you have a bad week in the playoffs and they don't win anything? And then he's gone and he's a Dodger. Of course, it'd be a disaster, especially giving up top prospects. Mm-hmm. It would be like trading, I don't know, let me think about this, unprotected draft picks for a decade for two fossils who barely play for you. I'm thinking of Paul Pierce and Kevin Garnett.
No, I'm sorry.
And it can hold
sorry,
you.
Bro.
And let's say those draft picks, those lottery tickets, turn into, I don't know, let me just pick up some names, Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. I don't know.
Yeah, right. Not bad. Not bad name. By the way, have you mentioned
risky.
That?
Yes.
Thank you, Miami Heat. Thank you so much. Boy, I'll tell you, man, I am so happy that they beat. I did not want to see the Boston freaking Celtics have that, you know, coming back from 3-0. Thank God that didn't happen.
It's so funny. After Miami lost game six the way they did in just ridiculous fashion.
Oh, my God. Ridiculous.
And it's going to be one of those games that goes down in history as like the forgotten game because you didn't win.
But it was an all-time great game, though.
All-time great finals game, though. And unlike some fan bases, we're not going to celebrate it because we lost the series. The Yandy Chavez catch, we lost the game. The John Starks dunk, you lost the series.
Exactly.
No celebration. But I thought to myself, like everyone else did, Boston's winning game seven. It's a lock. How could they lose game seven? But the more you watch that game and the more you think back to what the Celtics were this year, this was never the team that was going to come back from 3-0.
Well, first of all,
they were flawed all year.
How many games they lose at home? They lost twice to Philadelphia in the playoffs. They lost the first two games, actually lost three games at home to Miami when all was said and done.
Yeah.
You know, and one reason why I want to see Miami win this series, but one thing Miami did in the first three rounds of the playoffs is they won every game won on the road.
Right.
That didn't happen last night.
Well, they're dead.
I'm not going to say they're dead, but they're in trouble with this team. This team is pretty good.
I think they needed to steal game one.
Yes, I'm with you.
That was the game they needed to steal.
I'm with you.
And with them not being able to do it, Denver is longer. They're better.
Yeah.
They've got a dynamic force that no one can stop.
Yeah. Jamal Murray's pretty good, too.
Jamal Murray's tremendous.
Yep.
He's fantastic. He's the most. Even though they're in the NBA Finals, all the attention is now going to Jokic, and it should. Guy's incredible.
Yep.
But Jamal Murray had a torn ACL, and he has come all the way back.
Yeah, he's tremendous.
And he was great in the bubble, but I think a lot of people, maybe rightfully so, they don't give the bubble any credence. They don't give the Lakers credence, Miami's run, Jamal Murray, everything in the bubble. I think the Heat run this year and Jamal Murray's resurgence, to me at least, has validated what happened in that bubble.
Yeah.
To me
yeah.
at least.
Well, he's been great, and and here's the other thing that made me so happy. You know ABC wanted Boston Lakers. You know that.
Of course.
I'm seeing all these commercials. Magic Johnson, Larry Bird. Oh, my God. Yeah, and you know, Denver, Miami, they're all like, oh, my God.
Yes.
So I'm happy about that, too.
And congratulations to Jokic.
Stick it to ABC. Screw him.
Second player ever to have a triple-double in his first NBA Finals game. And let me just remind you who the first was.
I didn't realize. Now, that's against the Lakers.
Yes.
And, you know, obviously that was not a very good series for the Nets.
It was not a good series.
I don't remember him getting a triple-double in that. That was in L.A., obviously. I don't remember that.
Let me give you a short summary of game one, because this lives in my brain forever.
I don't remember game one.
And I totally get why
you
don't.
I was at the two games in the Meadowlands.
And they could have won them, by the way. Game three, they could have won.
They could have won game three.
They were down in game one of the NBA Finals.
They almost beat them in game two, if I'm not mistaken, too. They played them pretty tough in game two.
They played them tough both games in L.A.
Yeah.
In game one, they went down 41-18 first 20 minutes of the game, quarter and a half in. They were dead. They looked like they did not belong.
Right.
Like, they were run over by a dynasty. Okay, this is going to be quick and painless. We're out. They then meticulously made a comeback. They pulled it within three with 4 minutes to go, and they started hacking Shaq. And he made the free throws.
Yeah, well.
And Jason Kidd had a quiet
kind of like Mitchell
double.
Robinson a little bit this year.
A little bit, except
we didn't win the series.
Right. And he's not Shaq.
No.
But
hardly.
Yeah, that was the only other triple-double in a first NBA Finals game.
Jason Kidd.
Obviously, incredible performance by Jokic. He's been great entire postseason long.
No, he's great. I mean, he's a different kind of player. I mean, you look at the guy, you say, how's this guy so good? But he's an unbelievable passer.
Great passer.
I mean, he might be the best. I thought Bill Walton, because I saw Bill Walton play, you know, obviously, I've seen them all. I'm an old man that I am. I thought he was the best passing big man I ever saw.
Right.
This guy's better.
Yeah, I was going to say.
This guy's unbelievable.
For my era,
and
he's
he wants to pass first before he's taking shots.
Yeah.
He's not even worried about shooting.
His game is so multifaceted.
Yep.
Like, he can beat you down low and bang you in the post. He can hit the outside shot. He's an excellent passer. He's everything.
He's
a great player. And I think in the NBA, more than any other sport, to really kind of solidify yourself as an all-time great, you got to win.
Got to win. Got to win the championship.
He's going to win.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress-them-on-the-third-date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
His way.
I do feel obligated to tell you that today is an anniversary of sorts.
Oh, I know what today is. Is this why you could hold on a minute? Is this why you brought me here?
No. I would never
know.
To celebrate
30
this?
Years ago today.
He's got it.
Okay? 30 freaking years ago today, I thought my team, right, was on their way to an NBA championship. I got to tell you.
Yep.
Okay?
Yeah.
All right? By the way, nothing happens at 3 o'clock anymore?
Oh, no. We go on TV at 4 o'clock.
Okay. I don't know.
Anyway. Just let you know.
So 30 years ago today, I thought my team was on their way to an NBA championship. Okay?
Right.
They won 60 games. Only the second time in the history of the franchise besides the 70 championship team, they won 60 games. They'd won like 37 consecutive games in Madison Square Garden. All right? And this is a night I will never forget. Okay? Never, ever, ever in my life will I forget this night. They win the first two games of the Eastern Conference final. They win it. at home. The John Starks dunk in game two. Game three is on Memorial Day weekend. Jordan goes for 54. They lose. They lose game four in Chicago. Now they come back. The series is tied 2-2. Game five. And I still maintain this, bro. I'm telling you. Yes. I was flipping out that. I wasn't married yet. I was between wives. I was going out with Terry, but I wasn't married to her yet. I get out. I was with one of my buddies who's passed away since then. My good buddy, Jimmy DiClemente. He's passed away a number of years ago. Big Knick fan. He's over the house with me. I got all my old Knick Sports Illustrated covers all over the place. Like, they're all over. Like, I'm trying to get the karma going here. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Okay? And that, I mean, to me, the Charles Smith Memorial is still the worst loss in the history of the franchise. You could talk about Game 7 in Houston. You could talk about that. You want to talk about Game 7 in Houston, the bench incident against Miami, all the different things. Game 1 against Indiana in 95 and all of that. Okay, whatever. There was nothing as bad as that game. That was the worst, bro.
I understand it. Now, no, I did not call you to fill in for Craig because it's the 30-year anniversary.
30 years ago. That's right. 30 years ago today. And in Game 6, and I don't forget, they lose Game 5.
You must have thought they had no shot in Game 6 at that point.
Well, I told you the story. So that was a game. I guess Game 5 was Wednesday. Game 6 was a Friday. So I remember people saying, oh, they're going to win Game 6 and win Game 7. I'm like, you're out of your mind. They got no chance to win Game 6. And I'm watching Game 6. It's a Friday night, right? I think I had at least two martinis. I said, I am getting wasted because I can't, to live with this disaster of a year now, I can't take it. And of course, they basically got killed in Game 6. They were really never in the game.
Yeah. I can see why
30 years ago today.
I can see why that ranks
above.
And he
got fouled at least twice.
Well, I don't know.
At least.
I've watched it a few times to try to analyze it. It's tough. I don't know. They look like clean blocks to me.
You think that? You think they were? Well, hold on. You think that if Jordan's going up for that dunk, you think those are clean blocks?
No, but that doesn't make it the right call.
Oh my God!
Just because they call it doesn't make it the right call. You know, I'm reading a book that I cannot recommend enough about the Knicks. It's called Blood in the Garden.
All right? Really? Who wrote this?
Chris Herring, who did.
Okay.
Remarkable. He's a reporter. I don't know if you've read him or not, but I'll tell you this, bro. And I say this as someone that's not a Knicks fan, but I love the history of certainly New York sports.
No, you don't.
It is an incredible book.
How far does it go? All the way back?
It's the 90s Knicks. So
Bloody. Well, that's an apropos name, Blood in the Garden.
Hal Riley just hated Charles Smith because he thought he was soft. Because he didn't think he was tough, and he would ride him.
Why did they trade for him then? Riley traded for him. Why? Because to me, I look at that trade, okay? We got rid of Mark Jackson in that trade.
Right.
Okay? And because of that, they let Xavier McDaniel walk.
So the Xavier McDaniel thing was an F-up, is according to this book.
Oh, my God. Are you kidding me?
But at the time, an F-up. Not like, hey, looking back on it, it was stupid that they thought cap purpose-wise, they needed to wait on him. And they told him that.
Right.
This is the Knicks.
This is what they're saying. Okay.
You got to wait.
Right.
And he was sick of waiting. And he didn't know or didn't believe necessarily that they were going to take care of him.
That was a huge mistake.
So when the Celtics came down with that offer, and to a degree, I can't blame him.
Because I understand where he's coming from.
Think about
from.
When he signed, too. Wasn't it September?
Right.
So
that was a major
their
mistake.
Their plan was to keep him.
Yep.
And obviously they didn't.
That was a disaster. That's what I'm saying. So Riley's got nobody to blame but himself because he was part. He wanted that trade.
Yeah.
And Charles Smith, and let me say this about Charles Smith. Because Charles Smith was one of the nicest guys, and maybe this was a problem. Mm. One of the nicest guys I ever met. When I was doing the overnight, okay, and I used to go to games all the time, you know, he was in San Antonio at this point, and they're playing, you know, your team. I went to a lot of games.
Right, right.
You know, and I'm in a locker room after the game, and I go up to Charles Smith, and I say, look, Charles, I told him I'm doing an overnight show. I'm going to be on later on. I'd love to have you on. Would you come on?
Right.
Would you talk about, you know, your Nick years? And he did. He came on. He was great.
Yeah, no.
I don't forget stuff like that. But, you know.
He sounded like a classy dude, nice guy.
Intelligent guy. I think he's a lawyer.
Yeah.
I think he is.
He didn't fit in the locker room. Like, that's the other thing. Like, he just did not fit in with the guys.
No, I understand what you mean.
And Riley couldn't, pushed him because he didn't think he was tough enough.
Right.
Essentially what it came down to. And it sucks that his entire NBA career is known for that one moment.
Yeah.
But it is. It's the truth.
Of course.
And
he's got a game named after him.
Right. He does. He has a whole game. And a series defined by it.
A series defined by it. Yeah. Wow. 30 years ago
30
today.
Years ago today.
That's unbelievable. That was one of the toughest losses ever that I could endure in my lifetime for any team.
I remember when we did the Beningo bracket of pain, and I took all your painful moments. That one, that's the number one moment.
That was a lot of pain. I thought we were winning that year. I thought we were going to get Jordan finally, and you know, it was their year to win. You know, the home court advantage and all of that. Was that tough to take, man?
And Jordan was off in those first two games. Did not play well.
Well, you know what happened in that series.
He was in Atlantic City
gambling. Well, that's what turned the series around.
Right.
Because they made a big deal. He went to Atlantic City gambling.
Right.
And they made a big deal about it. It came out in all the papers, and that ticked Jordan off, and we know what happened after that.
The rest is history. When you look back at that dynasty, the double dynasty that he had, the 6-8 that he had in Chicago, that's some of the biggest adversity he faced, period. Being down 2-0 to the Knicks after losing those first two games, not playing well, the stories coming out about him gambling.
Yep.
Like, you look at his championships, there were adversity, but that's probably the most adversity he faced.
Could be.
Because he didn't face a lot
of it. Well, I mean, think about it. Once they finally got through the Pistons, okay?
Right.
Because the Pistons beat him a couple times in the playoffs. They finally got through the Pistons. He only played two game sevens after
that. That's a remarkable
92
thing.
92 against the Knicks and then in
Indiana,
the second round and in Indiana
that
in the conference finals.
None of the finals went to a seventh
that
game.
That was it. Yeah.
And just two game sevens.
Yeah.
So just remember this. Yeah. When guys break game seven records, remember Michael didn't get a lot of opportunities to play them.
Right. He didn't.
Which is a testament
to
his
greatness. The only game seven he lost was to the Pistons.
Yes.
The Pistons beat him pretty bad. I think they beat him in 5 or 6 the first time.
Right.
Then they beat him in 7 the next year. And then the Bulls swept them. And that was the whole thing with Isaiah walking off.
Right.
They all walked off the court.
But by that point, like once they got past that, they were off and running and they were a dynasty. So you look back at 89 and 88 and 90, those early years where they lost. Yeah, they lost. Jordan got beat. But once they won the first one, he was unbeatable.
He was unbeatable.
When you really think
about it. Well, he did lose that series when he came back from retirement.
Yeah.
They lost to Orlando. If you want to really count that.
And that was the series where, if I'm
not mistaken, Nick Anderson stealing a ball from him there at the end when he wore number 45.
Well, in the middle of the series, he changed it. He was wearing 45.
Oh, did he go to 23 in the series? In the middle of the series he did that? I don't remember that.
He was wearing 45, and I think it was Nick Anderson who said, that's 45, Jordan. That ain't 23.
Right.
And Michael was like, oh, really? And he changed his number in the middle of the series to 23. And
they still lost that series.
Right,
but then the next year they destroyed Orlando.
They did.
Swept them in 4.
Losing to Orlando after he changes the number is kind of left out of the story.
Right.
Because we think of Jordan as just never losing.
Right.
Well, and it would have been badass if they won. They didn't. But he changed the number in the middle of the series as a message.
I don't remember that.
23 is back.
I would have liked to seen the Bulls play the Elijah Wands, though.
Ah, that would have been amazing.
I would have liked to seen that. That would have been interesting.
I'll tell you another
one. They would have won anyway. Don't worry.
Probably.
Chicago would have won.
Chicago probably would have, but I would have liked to have seen it.
We can continue talking about Jordan and the Bulls the rest of the day. This is wonderful radio.
My feeling for Michael Jordan has changed dramatically on many levels. Now, I don't want to get into it, but dramatically. We'll leave it at that.
I get the Jordans versus the Olajuwons, and I think we've all thought that. You know what? The other one I thought, too, was Jordan's against Tim Duncan, David Robinson in 99.
Yeah.
Like, if
he stays for one more year,
and the last dance is 1999, short season 2,
right,
which would have benefited them as a veteran team, that would have been incredible, especially knowing what we know now about Duncan, who became this all-time great player, to have the birth of their potential dynasty against the end of the Bulls dynasty. Those are the two what-ifs in the NBA that would have been tremendous to see.
Yeah.
And then if they stick on another year, you take on Kobe and
Shaq. That would have been real interesting. I don't know. I don't know. They might have not been able to beat that team. Jordan was getting up there now. You know, they probably would not have beaten Shaq and Kobe.
And now you're losing. Now the dynasty ends by losing, by just saying, hey, we're done.
Right.
Carden Roberts, Craig Off, Joe B. filling in. But Joey and Yonkers, and I think the audience would enjoy it, about a week ago sent me clips of you calling
in. Did you ask for these?
No, not at all.
Joey just arbitrarily sent them to you.
But he knows I appreciate it. I'd appreciate it.
Well,
Joey's
unbelievable.
He's incredible.
Talk about a savant.
And
Joey's a savant.
I appreciate it for two reasons. A, you, right? You know, it's Joe B. calling up in years ago in a past lifetime as a caller.
Decades ago.
With Met Opinions. But I also just love it as a Met fan. Like, it's fascinating to hear the discussion from 30 years ago. Like, to think, hey, if we were on the air 30 years earlier, this is what we'd be talking about. And it was also cool because Howie was the guy you were talking to.
Right.
And of course, Howie
was. I used to call Howie all the time.
Yeah.
I think he was on Monday nights, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, he also used to take phone calls on Mets Extra.
Oh, right.
a lot of these calls were on Mets Extra. So the Mets played a game, you know, probably lost because the year was 91, 92, that kind of
That wasn't a good year. That wasn't good. That was post Darryl.
Yes, it was.
Very painful.
And you and Howie would talk about the Mets. So I thought if you're a Joe B fan, you'd appreciate it. And if you're just a Met fan, you'd appreciate it. So would you like to hear you and Howie talking about the managerial search? Because the Mets had fired Buddy Harrelson,
right,
as you may recall. And Mike Kubich took over for like a week, basically.
And then Torborg was the next guy, right?
That's right. So here's Joe calling up Howie.
Can't wait to hear.
Talking about the Met managers.
Wow. Getting to the managerial situation. I don't know if you remember. We spoke a couple months ago. And I said, at that point, Buddy should have been fired. And Kubich made the interim. Exactly for the reason to give the guy a good 2 months, you know, under maybe, you know, a little pressure. That. And see what the heck you can do.
Well, that's the least that they could have accomplished. I agree with that. I mean, I thought and I said so at the time. He should have been gone during that disastrous road trip.
Absolutely.
After the disastrous West Coast trip.
Absolutely. But now only giving him a week, Howie, I feel they have to go out of the organization and bring in some kind of a strong personality here. I would really love to see Dallas Green. I mean, personally, I'd love to see him. You know, I hear Jeff Torborg. I guess that's an impossibility you're ever going to get Jeff Torborg.
He was actually good at the time,
if there's any
right?
way to get him, he shoots right to the top of the list.
No, absolutely.
Listen to Howie, right at the top of the list.
Yeah, he's terrific. Shoots the top of the list. He was good at the time.
He was, with the White Sox.
With the White Sox, yeah.
And Dallas Green did eventually come here, too.
Yeah, they hired Jeff Torborg. Right. He was a disaster. One of the worst managers in the history of the franchise.
And what was even worse for Torborg, he had to come on with Mike and Chris like every week. And it was a disaster. I mean, you could find some of those because they stunk. And, I mean, you know, well, it was scuffling. Oh, my God. Torborg.
I once heard Jeff Torborg, and I give him a lot of credit for this. He started to do Sunday Night Baseball after the managerial career ended. And they were doing a Met game. And he said, hey, I was in the Met Hall of Fame. I got an issue. I was walking around. I saw the busts. Why wasn't there a bust of me? And the other announcer's like, are you serious? And he's like, yeah, I'm the biggest bust in Met history.
Pretty close. So he's up there. Maybe Jason Bay.
Yeah.
Maybe Robbie Alomar.
Oh, I think.
Carlos Baerga comes to mind.
I think Alomar may be number one.
Yeah, he probably is.
I got to be honest with you.
Yeah, Alomar was,
Now, this clip I loved because you were very passionate about the Mets signing a free agent. There was a free agent in particular
You
wanted them to go after.
I hope I'm wrong.
And as always, let me leave you with, and I will always do this from now on until it happens, hopefully.
Doesn't even sound like
Please sign Bobby Bonilla.
Oh, my God.
Good night, Howie.
All right, take care.
That's my favorite.
Oh, my. That worked out well. Bobby Bonilla. Doesn't even sound like me. Who is that guy?
Yeah, it sounds completely different.
Right? Does this sound like me?
It's very funny.
You sound very different.
Funny.
Howie sounds the same.
Exactly the same. You know? Very bizarre.
So this is like, because this is before I'm on the air.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So we're talking like, you know, 1993 maybe?
Well, it's earlier. Remember,
Bonilla was 92, right?
They signed Bonilla going into 92, right. So this is late 91.
Wow.
Same thing with the managers.
Wow.
I got one more clip. It's up to you if you want to hear it.
No, we'll hear it, but hold on. I was youthful then.
we're
talking about 1991, so we are talking like 32 years ago?
32 years ago, yeah.
Wow, I was still like in my 30s then.
Young man.
I was younger than you on that.
You were younger than me now. Howie was too.
Because Howie and I are like the same age.
Yeah, I think so.
I think he might be a year older than me, or maybe exactly the same.
You know,
I don't
what?
Know.
We had him on a few days ago, and he said he's about to turn 70. So
we're the same.
Same
yeah,
age.
Yeah.
But Howie sounds exactly the same.
Yeah, he does.
You,
not
I agree,
me.
Sound very different.
I don't know what happened to me.
But everybody sounds different. We played a clip a while ago of the first show Craig and I did, which is not that long ago, 2.5 years ago.
Right.
And Craig sounded completely different, right, Big Mac? He didn't even sound like himself.
No, amazing.
In just 2.5 years.
Two and a half years.
Wow.
So I guess it's normal. Howie's the one who's abnormal. He sounds exactly the same. The last clip is you talking about how Sid Fernandez needs to lose weight. Would you like to hear that?
Oh, is that? Did I mention that?
Sid Fernandez. You know, when is the Met management going to say, hey, Sid, it's time to drop the weight. This is this man's problem. His injury problems, his stamina problems. He's 40, 50 pounds overweight.
Well, was he 40, 50 pounds overweight?
I don't know that. But I think that's the you know, he did have a lot of knee issues, and I think it was because of that, to be honest with you.
Yeah, he was a big guy at that time.
But he was a good pitcher for the Mets. He was good.
Absolutely. Speaking of good pitchers, and I said this the other day, and I've given it more thought. So the Mets are inducting four guys into the Mets Hall of Fame this weekend. Howie Rose and Gary Cohen, who are, you know, I mean, they define a generation now.
Right, of course.
For how long they've been broadcasting. You know, Gary took over, I think, 1989 on the radio with Bob Murphy.
Right.
Howie started doing radio with Garrett. Well, he started doing TV, I should say, with Fran Healy. He was doing TV in the mid-90s.
The old sports channel.
And then Gary and Howie had a couple of years where they did the radio together, and then Gary made the jump to SNY. And then Howie was the lead guy on radio. So they are two incredible voices, basically, of certainly my generation. You're 40 and under. Those are the guys you grew up with.
No doubt.
I heard a little bit about Murphy, obviously. I grew up with Murphy, too, but by 2003, he had retired, if I'm not mistaken.
Something like that. I've seen it all, bro. I mean, I went all the years with Lindsey Nelson and Ralph Kiner and Murphy. I mean, that was, you know, the first, what, 17 years, 18 years.
So Bob Murphy, obviously from 62 until 2003. So he broadcasted for about 40 years. Gary Cohn's catching up. He's almost there.
Yeah, I know.
If he started in 89, which 40
he's
years after 89.
Yeah, no.
Isn't that 2029?
Yeah, he's getting there.
He's basically there.
He's closing in.
But Howard Johnson is going in. Well-deserved. Hojo.
By the way, we're going to have Howard Johnson on our Saturday show tomorrow. I just got it confirmed.
Oh, tremendous.
10:20 tomorrow for Howard Johnson.
Perfect. The great Howard Johnson.
Go. Check out the Saturday show.
And Al Leiter is going into the Mets Hall of Fame.
He should. He should be in.
He absolutely deserves it. And I know your answer is going to be different. It should be. You've seen a lot more. In my lifetime, just my lifetime, which starts in 92, 93, I started understanding the Mets. What a great time to start understanding the Mets.
It was wonderful.
I think in a big game, season on the line, life on the line, I think I'm taking Al Leiter over anybody else I saw, and that includes DeGrom, as great as DeGrom
was.
He was
good. Al was good. Look, I mean, look, we all remember the game in 99, the play-in game, and whatever you want to call it, against Cincinnati.
Yep.
Which was probably the best game he ever pitched for the Mets. And even the World Series game, but you know, game five, he pitched good in that game.
Oh, dude.
That was good.
I really thought, and I can't figure out why, because this is purely emotional. This has no stats. There's no analytics. It's just emotion. When Al Leiter was on the mound in the ninth inning against the Yankees in game five of the World Series, I wanted him there. I never wanted him out of the game. I never did. He got the first two outs in the ninth inning, gave up back-to-back hits, and then the Luis Soho thing, right? No regrets. I have no issues with Bobby Valentine. I wanted Al Leiter on the mound. He had John Franco warming up, right? But with Matt Harvey, 15 years later, it pissed me off to no end that Familia didn't come in to pitch the ninth. And it still bothers me. Yeah. It's been 8 years.
I was so pissed about that. I take the other tack on that.
On both?
I wanted Harvey to pitch the ninth.
You did? Okay. Yeah.
And I got to tell you, I mean, it didn't end well for Matt Harvey, but I have a place in my heart for Matt Harvey now. I got to tell you.
No, I get that.
I mean, I feel bad the way it played out. You know, it was too much too soon. You know, I remember I criticized him for being, you know, he's going out with supermodels. He hasn't really earned all that yet, you know?
Right.
I mean, that's fine. But, I mean, you haven't, as far as your baseball career, and I think it all came back to bite him, you know?
It was 2.5 years of brilliance for Matt Harvey.
That was it.
That's all it was.
And that really was it. Game five of the World Series was the last hurrah for Matt Harvey.
It was. And I don't know if it had anything to do with how many innings he threw coming off Tommy John. I honestly don't think so, if I had to guess. I think it's just maybe what you said, too much too soon. But those are two scenarios. That's why 2000 and 2015 still kill me. I thought the World Series were almost exactly the same.
They were.
Game one, lose game two, win game three, brutal losses in game four, Derek Jeter first pitch, Mets blow game
Bobby
four.
Bobby Jones.
And then game five, where it's just this awful loss with one of your best pitchers on the mound as you're basically blowing it.
Al Leiter also pitched the game six against the Braves, too.
All right.
We don't win. So didn't exactly do well in that game.
He did not record an out in that game. And for years, I've always said, boy, that's the one dud on his resume.
Right, it is.
He said this to us a year ago, and he said, what you may not know, and it changed my view on it. We'll see if it does for you. No, he was warming up in the bullpen game five, Robin Ventura grand slam single. They had nobody left. And he was warming up ready to pitch. So he was warming up to pitch a day and a half earlier.
Wow.
And that may have kind of affected him.
Now, they should have won the game anyway, as we know how that turned out.
Yeah, it was blown by Franco and Benitez.
Yeah, yes. Everybody kills Kenny Rogers, but those are the guys that really good at games.
John Franco and Armando Benitez had leads in game six. Yep. They were going to be the first team ever to force the seventh game after being down 3-0.
Yeah.
They were going to force. Now, I don't know if they would have won it, but they were forcing it. And they blew the lead twice. And then, we remember Kenny Rogers walking Andrew Jones.
Yep. Yep.
And Bob Costas screaming, bring on the Yankees. Yuck. Jeez, I got that.
Yeah, it didn't end well for the Braves either.
No, it didn't. The Yankees killed them. Yep. Four.
Yep.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better over here.
Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.